everybody knows the Lord.
They're pretty obvious. Let's say I had an uncle who died who had no children, and he left four sisters. My mother was one of the four sisters. So even though my mother was the oldest, there's no din of b'chora by women, it's only by men. So all the four sisters should divide equally. So each one of the sisters should get 25% of the Yerusha. So my mother had two children, and a sister of hers had three children. So so the aunt who is in charge of dividing, one of the sisters is in charge of dividing. The Yerusha didn't know the dinim, she didn't ask Shaila. So she took all of the, and the sisters, some of the sisters passed away, my brother passed away already. So she took all of the grandchildren, she gave everybody an equal share. So that's not correct. If one sister, let's say my mother had a son and a daughter, so I'll keep in, all you, 25% of the Yerusha goes to me. So they gave my sister an equal share to me, that was against the din. And then they gave another sister, had three children, so they gave their three to two sons and a daughter, so they gave everybody an equal share. If one sister only has one child, one sister has 10 children, so they don't get an equal share. The one who has one child gets the whole 25%. The one who has 10 children, so each child gets 1/10 of 25%. The dinim are very simple, and the Mishnayos. I remember once a woman came to me, the whole Shaila of Yerusha, she was telling me it took an hour till she told the whole story. Who took care of the mother when she got sick? It doesn't matter who took care of the mother. Who was the favorite child? The din is, if there are sons and daughters, the sons get, the daughters don't get. The dinim are very clear in the Mishnayos. The thing that's a little not so clear is a pchor gets pishnayim, only b'muchzak, not b'ra'ui. So the Gemara has a machlokes, what about a halvo'a? What if the father lent money and says, so let's say the father lent, if the father bought a ticket, a sweepstakes ticket, and the drawing is after the father died, that's called Rawi. So the Pchor doesn't get a double portion in what the father gets after he died. Or let's say Avraham Yitzchak and Yankov. So let's say for argument's sake, Yitzchak dies before Avraham, and Yitzchak has two sons, Yankov and Esau. Let's say Yankov is the Pchor, and Esau is the portion. So Yankov is supposed to get two portions, but Avram dies after Yitzchak. So when Yitzchak died, for argument's sake, so when Yitzchak died, he didn't have the millions of dollars that Avram nichse davur dabi. He didn't have that money before he died. So that's called Ro'i. So Yankov doesn't get a double share in Ro'i, he only gets a muchzik. So the Gemara has a machloek satanayim. What about a halvor? What if the father lent money and he wasn't zecha to collect the money till after he died? So we pass on the halacha that Ahavor is also called Ra'ui. It's not called Muchzak. The Mechor doesn't get Pishnai. So Gemara had svaras to say maybe it depends how certain you are that you're going to collect the debt. Maybe it makes a difference if you lent the money to a Jew, lent the money to a non-Jew. In which direction are you more secure that you're going to collect it? So it's a machlekes in the Rishonim. Which direction? So some say if you lent it to the Nachri, you're more secure. How could that be? You're more vaday they're going to collect it. So they say because by the Nochrim, if a person doesn't pay his debts, they sell him as a slave. And a Jew, there is no such thing. If a person stole, you sell him as an avid ivri. But if a person owes money, Allah, you don't sell him. So if you lend the money to a Jew, you're less vaday, you're less secure that you're going to collect it. Most of the Rishonim go the other way. If you lend the money to a Jew, you're more secure that you are going to collect, as opposed to lending to a Nochri that you're less secure. So Gemara had one opinion: when you're more secure that you're going to collect the halvoya, then it's called muchzak, then it's not called right. Then Gemara rejects it; it doesn't make a difference. One was the opinion. One amandar and the Gemara is of the opinion: if the milvav vishtar, you're more secure, you're going to collect. Milvav pe, you're less secure. We paskin, it doesn't make a difference. Milvav vishtar, milvav pe, whether you lend to a Jew, lend to a goy, even if you're secure, you're going to get it. The halva is always called Roy. So that's a big shaila. What if it's a government bond? What if I lent money to the United States government? So what do you mean I'm not secure that he's going to pay back the money? The whole government is going to collapse. It's possible the government can collapse, but the government collapse is highly unlikely. So that was a big machlokes. What if you're absolutely secure and you're going to get it back? So this is machlokes between the Nodi Behuda and the Shoyl. The Shoyl and the Chuvas Nodi Behuda was a big Tamachachem. And he thought that that it should make a difference how secure you are, whether you're going to collect the money or not. Nebi Yehuda said it does make a difference. So I personally thought that Nebi Yehuda was right, but many, the Aruch HaShulchan says not so. Aruch HaShulchan says if it's a government bond, or if the money is in the bank, but the bank is federally insured, FDIC, so he writes that's considered muksav, that's not considered roi. Rav Moshe Feinstein says also that they say Balpen, name Rav Moshe, that the money in the bank, when you put money in a safe deposit vault, so the money sits there. So that's mamish muksav. But when you put money in a savings account, that's a halvoya. It's not a pikudin. So the bank invests the money and they owe you. So they say in the name of Rav Moshe, let's say I put $100,000 in the bank and accumulates interest. I never had the interest. So Rav Moshe was of the opinion of all the interest that accumulated by the time the father dies, everything is called muchzak because it's FDIC and it's vada, you're going to collect it, you're going to the bank any day and you can ask for your money. Legally, they're not muchiv to give you more than a certain amount of money in cash when you go that day, but usually they will give you all the money. If they have all the money, they'll give you all the money. So that's a big shayla halacha lamaisa, whether halvoyah, when the father dies and the b'chor is entitled to pishnayim, he doesn't get pishnayim in ra'ur, only a muchzak. Do we say all halvoyahs are considered roi? Or do you say no, it depends. If you're pretty positive, if it's FDIC, then it's considered a muchzak. So that's a major machlekes. Then there's a din habal yorish es ishtoi. That's a machlekes hatanoim. It doesn't make that much of a difference, machlekes hatanoim. Like the Rambam and the Raivo, the Abal Yerush and Sishta is a din the Raisa, din the Rabbanan. The Rambam paskin that it's only the Rabbanan, the Raivo is Masik, he thinks that Abal Yerush and Sishta is a din the Raisa. It's machleik satanoin. It doesn't make that much of a difference. It makes a few differences, slight differences. In Pcheris, whether it goes back to Yoivol or not, but Allah Maisa Bayas, it doesn't really make a difference. So the Gemara has a similar din. Habal Yorush Es Ishtoi, only if the money is muchzak, the money is roi, the husband doesn't get it. So let's say the wife dies, and after the wife dies, then the father-in-law dies, and he has no sons, he only has daughters. So does the husband yarshan or not? So that's mamish roi. That's mamish roi. The father-in-law dies after the wife died. That's literally roi. So the husband doesn't yarshan b'roi kema muchzak. But what if the wife lent money? So by Pchor we pass Kana Halvoy is considered Ra'oi, and it's not Muchzok, Satesis, and Bava Basra, and Pchoris, whenever the topic comes up, Satesis can have this long Arichas, that since a Halvoy is considered Ra'oi by Pchor, the Pchor doesn't get Mishnaim, so Halvoy is considered Ra'oi by Habal Yerush Es Ishtoi, and the husband doesn't get. It's a big Nafkamina Ladina, the wife dies, and she has a lot of money, in savings account. She has $100,000 in savings account. The savings account is a halvoy. You lent money to the bank. So if it's federally insured, so a Moshe holds like the Aruch HaShulchan that it's called muchzak given by the b'chor, so it's called muchzak by the husband also. Well, let's say the wife had the money invested. She has bonds from investment corporations that are not federally insured. Or if you hold like the Nadi Bihuda, I thought the Pach was like the Nadi Bihuda, that even if it's federally insured, Alvo is considered Ra'oi. So what's the din by a Bal Yerush Es Ishtoi? So there's a famous Shitas Ri Megash. Ri Megash has a Pshat and a Gemara that a Bal Yerush Es Ishtoi, the definition of Ra'oi and Muchzok, is not the same as by Pchor. By Alvo is considered Ra'oi, that's only by Pchor, not entitled Pishnayim. But the husband Yarshan's the wife. Is halva is considered muchzak, and the din of roi doesn't apply over there. This is very halacha lamaisa. I remember the first time I visited Eretz Yisrael, there was a din Torah at that time. Rav Unterman was the chief rabbi, and I think his second wife passed away. His second wife was the almana of Rav Shlomo Hyman. Shlomo Hyman was the Rosh Hashiva in Torah Vadas. They used to make fun at that time. She used to be married to Haiman, and then she married Unterman. Haiman means somebody very special. Unterman means a lower level. Because Rabbi Unterman was from the Mizrahi. He was a chief rabbi. He was chief rabbi of Eretz. So they make him fun. He was a big tamachal. He learned perhaps Shemenshko. So I think that's the story. I think the wife didn't have any children. I think that's the story. And And she had a lot of her money was in savings accounts, so businesses, tied up in businesses. And there was a big din Torah in Tel Aviv, where the big Bat Dinim used to be. I don't know where they are now. Years ago, the big Bat Dinim used to be in Tel Aviv. There was a big din Torah where the Hiyarshim Zena. So there's a Bishmol and Ebenezer in Simon Ayin, I think, where the Bishmol writes. It's a question how the Rambam holds, whether the Rambam agrees with the Rimagash or not. The Magen Mishnah claims that he thinks that the Rambam agrees with this Rimagash, this unusual opinion, that Alvoy, even though it's considered Roi by the Pchor, but it's considered muchzik with respect to Habal Yarshis Ishtoi, so the husband does Yarsh. So the Beishmuel writes in Ebenezer, even if it's true that the Rambam holds like the Rimagash, but that's a minority opinion, we don't really pass like the Rimagash. And even he says, the Achreinim have a klal, in Choshim Mishpat they have a klal, if someone is muchzik on the money, and there's a minority opinion that says he's entitled to it, even though Bezin is going to pass like the majority opinion, he's not entitled to it, but since he's muchzik, he can say kimli, I hold like that minority opinion. Because Eilev Eilev Dirili Kimchaim, and he's muchzik, So the Beishmul says, he gives you klolim when you apply. So he says, if it's a shita yichidah, Rimagash holds like that, nobody agrees. Shita yichidah, so you have no right to say kimli, kishita sa Rimagash. What if the Rambam agrees with the Rimagash? So he says that also counts only as a shita yichidah. Because the Rambam writes, as a child, his father took him to, his father learned by the Rimagash. Rimagash was a Talmud of the Rif. The Rif lived in Fez. That's why he's called Rabbi Nitzchak Alfazi. He lived in Fez in Morocco. And then he had to run away at the age of 75. He had to run to Spain because they had some kind of malshinas against him. They thought he was undermining the government at the age of 75. So he ran to Spain. He started a new career till the age of 90. And his famous student, the Rimagash, was from the second career. We don't have anybody famous from the first career. Till the age 75, we don't have any famous Talmidim of the Rif from Fez. The famous Talmud is the Rimagash from Spain later on. So the Rambam, as a child, once met the Rimagash. His father, Rabbi Naimon, took the Rambam for a bracha, gave him a bracha, and he attributed his success. The Rambam attributed his success in learning to the bracha that the Rimagash gave him. And he writes in one place, I think in the Hakdamah to his Pirush HaMishnayos, he writes about the Rimagash, Sichlo Mavis B'chol HaTalmud. He was phenomenal, unbelievable. So he says, the Rambam naturally is going to follow the Rimagash without even thinking. So he says, that doesn't count as two independent opinions. That counts only as Shita Yechidah. And even if the husband is muchzak on the halvah, the wife made a halvah, she didn't collect it during her lifetime, even if the husband is muchzak, he's holding on to the money, it can't tie in a kimli because it's lagamri as Shita Yechidah. So the Beishmul says, we don't paskin like that Rimagash, period, at all. We pass on like Tosis that a halvoa is considered ro'i even by Abal Yerushas Ishtoi. So the only shaila is what about by Pchor, the money in the bank? If it's called muchzak by the Pchor, because it's federally insured, so it's called muchzak by the husband also. So that's an issue. Yeah, we have the laws of Yerusha. They're clear in the Chumash. The Mishnayos make everything very clear. Does the person have a right to make a tzavua before he dies, where he wants his money to go? So the Mishnah Bava Basu Kuf Lamed Amar Al Kotz Rav Yechon Ben Broika. Yes, Atorah Nastam Rishus Laav Lahan Chalachon Misha Yirtzah. Because the Pesuk in Chumash says, "Boyo Biyom Hatchilu As Bana Beisah Shiyalo." When he's about to give over the Yerusha, Liyuchal Lebakas Benu Ahuva Al Pnei Ben Hasnu Hapchor. What do you mean? Biyom Hanchilo is born. He's going to drop dead. Malach HaMov is going to take my life. What do you mean, Hanchilo? It sounds like the Torah gives me the right to decide who should get. So, I can make a tzavo, whatever I want. I can leave all the money to my girlfriend, or to my son-in-law, or to my next-door neighbor. So the Mishnah says, no, only if it's Ben Ben Abonim. It means if I have, let's say, three sons, and one son is very successful in business, the two are sitting and learning. So one is successful in business, he doesn't need the Yerusha. I don't have so much money to leave the Yerusha. So the one successful in business doesn't need my peanuts. He has more than I have. And the two are sitting and learning, they could use it more. So if I leave, maybe it's not so smart, but I'll leave at Savo. I want the two sons who are in line to get one-third. I have three sons. Each one is going to get, I have six daughters and three sons. So the one son is in business. So he doesn't need my Yerusha. So maybe it's a stupid thing to do, but let's say I say, I leave it Tzavua, I want the two sons to get 50% each, and the one son who's in business, he doesn't need it, he should get nothing. So maybe it's not a smart idea, but I'm picking out the sons who are in line to get something, I say each one should get 50%. So that the Torah gives me the right to do. But if I want to give it to a stranger, well, I have six daughters and three sons. I want to say all the nine children should get equal share. The daughters are not in line to get a penny. If I have sons, the daughters are not in line to get anything. But that's not included in the Chiddush HaTorah, that the HaTorah does the Meshuas Lav Lahan Chalachon Mishayirtz. Also, if he says it in the negative, I say for my three sons, plainly shouldn't get anything. If I say in the negative, then it doesn't work. I have to say it in the positive. The two sons should get 50% each. Instead of saying the third son should get nothing, if you say it in a negative, that's not valid. That's not a valid tzavua. If you say it in the positive, these two sons should get 50% each, then we pass on that it's valid. So it's very restricted. This din, we pass on like Abech Mabag, very restricted, very limited. It doesn't help. The daughters are going to, after I die, they're going to kill me. Why I left them nothing? Six daughters and three sons. The son's going to get everything. The oldest child is a girl by me. So the oldest boy doesn't get Pishnayim because he's not the Bchor. Bchor means the firstborn. Firstborn has to be a boy. So the whole din of Tzavua doesn't help. The Achrayim say that you should really, when you reach the age of 50, you should make a Tzavua. One of the prominent Rosh Yeshiva in America, when he reached the age of 50, he told the children that he made a Tzavua. And how his money should be divided and so on. So one of his daughters-in-law was telling me, something wrong with her father-in-law, he's so morose, he's only 50 years old and he's thinking of dying already. So I said, just following what it says in the Pesukim. It says in the Svarim, when you reach the age of 50, you should make a tzavua. It's based on the Pesuk. Mishnas ha-yovel azos toshuvu ish al-achuzasa. So the true pshat in the Pesuk means, when it comes shnas ha-yovel, you sold the field in Eretz Yisrael, so you get it back. When it comes Shnas Yom Kippur of Yovel, you get it back. So the Achrayim say a Malitza b'Shnas Yovel Azas. When a person reaches the age of 50, he should consider the fact that Toshuvu Ishalach Azasa. We're all going to return to our Maker. We should all start thinking about preparing for death. You should buy a cemetery plot somewhere, and you should leave it Tzavua. So I said, just following what it says in the Pesukim, he's not Maros. And after he died, they read his Tzavua, and in his Tzavua, he said, if there'll be any Shaila and Hilchas Avelis, the children should follow what it says in the Sefer, Chaim Avroch and the Mishmar Shalom. That's that Sefer, where he quotes this. Chaim Avroch and Mishmar Shalom is a fantastic Sefer. It's a Sefer on Hilchas Avelis, has everything alphabetically arranged. And then he has such a Sefer also on Hilchas Dalad Minim, has all the Hilchas Dalad Minim alphabetically arranged. He was a big Pesik 100 years ago. He has a Haskama from Chaim Soloveitchik. He quotes things from the Or Sameach, from the Marsham. The Marsham has the Oris on the Sefer. They're both fantastic Sefer. He wrote a Sefer, Mishmer Sholem. Mishmer Sholem is a Chibra on the Prima Godem on Yeridei. Today, nobody learns the Prima Godem, so they don't need a super commentary on the Prima Godem. But years ago, that was the ABC. You couldn't get smicha without the Prima Godem. So the Mishmer Sholem is a Chibra. So he wrote, the same author wrote a Sefer, Chaim Avroch, the Mishmer Sholem. Hilchas Avelis alphabetically arranged, and Hilchas Dalad Minim alphabetically arranged. He writes the reason why he's writing Hilchas Dalad Minim, because before Yom Kippur, all the Rabbanim are busy with the Cholim, who has to eat, who's not allowed to eat, and with the Davening, and the Tkiyah Shoif, and the Baltikir. Then it comes Sukkot, they have to know the Dinim of Dalad Minim. The Rabbanim have no time to go look through all the Dinim. He's going to make it easier, he's going to put everything in alphabetical order. Like Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius wrote a separate Sefer on Hilchas Kriya Satira. Shari Ephraim. He wrote the Mate Ephraim in Hilchas Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, and he wrote the Shari Ephraim in Hilchas Kriya Satira. He says, if you find a Shaila, a mistake in the Sefer, in the middle of Kriya Satira, you have no time to go start Mishing in Shulchan Aruch. He wrote a separate Sefer. It's a fantastic Sefer. It has all the Hilchas Kriya Satira, not alphabetically arranged, but in a Mesudah Dika fashion, and now they have in the later editions of the Shari Ephraim, they have footnotes, but they have a likut of all the achrayim, what everybody says. It's fantastic reading, the Shari Ephraim. But the same over here, this, the Chaim Avroch, the Mishmar Sham, this Rosh Yeshiva, wrote in his Tavoah, if the children will have any Shalom Hilchas Avelis, they should follow what it says in that Sefer. That's the Sefer where he quotes that when you reach the age of 50, you should make a Tavoah. So the tzavoya is not really going to help too much. If you have six daughters and three sons, tzavoya is not going to help too much. Because you can't give to the baska makam abeim, you can't give. Furthermore, the Gemara on the next daf, that's on Kuf Lamed Omed Aleph and Bavar Basu. The next daf, Kuf Lamed Aleph Omed Aleph, the Gemara has a suffix. Maybe that din deraisa biyom hanchila asbanav. Third nostan rishus la'av lachancha lachomi sheyirtze. Maybe that only applies when the father is a shchibera, when the father is holding by the end, he's sick. Not a goses. A goses means mom is holding by the end. All the vital organs are shutting down. That's called a goses. The Rambam gives you the definition of a goses. There's special dinim sometimes for a goses. One of the dinim is that once a person is a goses, there's no mitzvah to extend his life further. Just let him die in peace. So the Rambam gives you in the Pirush HaMishnayos, Perek Aleph and Aholos, he gives you what's the definition of a goses. So I don't know Arabic, so I use the Hebrew translation. So the Hebrew translation, it says that death is a process, and when the Tahalich HaMavis begins, that's called Goses. So that's the question, when does the process begin and when does the process end? If you know what the end is, then you'll be able to figure out what the beginning is. Okay, that's a different topic. When is a person considered dead? So the Goses means when the Tahalich HaMavis began already. Shchemira just means that he's sick in bed. And there's a chance that he may die. He may not survive from the sickness. A guy has the flu and he's sick in bed. That's also called the shchidmera. Usually the 99 out of 100 cases, they'll survive the flu. But sometimes he won't. So that's when the Gemara has a suffering. Maybe this din d'arais of Rabbi Yechon ben Breika, Torah nostrum shuz la'av la'hanchil, chom mishiyitza, maybe it only applies when a Torah, not when he's 50 years old, he makes it survive. Maybe it's only when he's holding by being a shchidmera, if he's sick in bed. So Baya said, it'll never apply. We make a tzavua way before. You make out a will way before. So it doesn't work. So how does it help if you make out a will? So Tosis points out there is a din derabanan, mitzvah lekayim divrei ames. If a person left over money, and he says, after I die, I give the money for this cause, you have to follow mitzvah lekayim divrei ames. You have to give the money. So the Tosfos has kashas, Tosfos in Baba Basra, big Tosfos, Tosfos in Gitnan, Daf Yud Gimel. They have a ton of kashas, how come this Gemara, that Gemara. So Tosfos comes up with suggestion, you have to restrict the din. If you don't restrict the din, if you unlimit it, so you're going to have 1,001 kashas. The Tosfos has to restrict it. So the way it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, question whether we really pass like this, the way it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, this din is limited. Mitzvah lekayim divrei ames only applies to hushlash mitchila lekach. If the money was given over to a third party for the purpose of distributing the money after the person dies. So let's say I have money in a savings account, and then I put money in a trust fund. I have 9 children, so I put a lot of money in a trust fund for my children. So the money is held by the bank, and the trust fund is reversible. I can always go to the bank and say, I want to withdraw the money. That's reversible, doesn't matter. But it's hushlish mitchila lekach. The money was put away in a trust fund so that after I die, the bank should give over the money to these children. So whenever the money is hushlish mitchila lekach, then for sure you say mitzvah lekayim divrei ames, even though it's in contradiction to the laws of Yerusha. I have 6 daughters and 3 sons, and if I put away money, put away equal amount in 9 different trust funds for all the 9 children, so that for sure that's no problem. The Binyan Tzion has a tshuva. I think it's one of the Marmakaimis over here. He has a tshuva that we really paskin, you need hushlash mitchila lekach. Maybe you don't paskin, but that's the way it says in Shulchan Aruch. You have to have hushlash mitchila lekach. What if a person leaves at Savoy, and after I die, please give $100,000 to Yeshiva University, and give $100,000 to the Yeshiva where I learned in Eretz Yisrael? He wants to. The yeshivas where his children went to school, he wants to leave money for tzedakah. So, but the money was never hushlish from tchila lekach. So, is that binding? What, he took a neder? If he took a neder, now he's dead. He's not mekayim the neder. He's not mekayim the neder. So, it was a shaila here a couple of years ago. I'll leave that some details so you don't have to know who it is. Somebody went to shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He took a pledge he's going to give $100,000 to the local yeshiva. And then he died before he had a chance to give the money. So he left the son and the daughter. So the son was not yet the Shema Mitzvahs. And the daughter is very from her children, her children by the yeshiva. Prominent Talmid HaChacham. So the brother didn't know the din that he gets the whole Yerusha and the daughter doesn't get anything. So the father left a lot of money. So he divided the money. He sent half of the money. They live in different cities. So he sent half of the Yerusha to the sister and half he kept. So the shah, and he wasn't interested in giving the money to the local day school. He knew the father took a pledge. He wasn't a Tamechtar. He wasn't a Shemar Mitzvah yet. So the shaila was whether the sister is mukhayif to give the full amount to tzedakah or to half the amount. She got half the money. Half the amount of zero, maybe she's not mukhayif to give anything. So back in the days of Rabbi Yosef Kar, this was a big machlokes, the Ramah and Rabbi Yosef Kar. Yosef Kar lived in Tzfat and Eretz Yisrael. Ramah lived in Krakow in Poland, and they corresponded. I don't know how many years it took to deliver the mail, but somehow there was a mail delivery. So they corresponded with each other. So they have tshuvas about that topic. A man took a neder to give money to tzedakah, and he died before he had a chance to pay the money. So did the Yorshim have to pay the money? What's the shaila? He's dead. Meisim chavshim. Once the guy's dead, he can't fulfill any mitzvah. He can't say he took a neder and he has to be mekayim the neder. He's dead. He's putter from being mekayim the neder. The shaila is: do you say there is a din amirasa lagavaya kimsirasa lahed yadami? If you pledge to give money to hegdish, gavaya means hegdish. If you pledge to give money to Hegdish, so not only is it chay mitim neder, it's nishtab dohanachasim that constitutes a kinyan. So even after you die, your assets are meshuvah to pay the money to the Hegdish. So there was a big machlokes of Yosef Kar and the Ramah whether amiras al gavaya is restricted only to Hegdish or it even applies to tzedakah. So the breakdown was Rabbi Yosef Kar, it's a machlokes in the Rishonim. As Machlokes, Rabbi Yosef Kar and the Ramah had a paskin. Rabbi Yosef Kar paskin that it does apply even to tzedakah, and the Ramah paskin that it does not apply to tzedakah. So one of the Rabbanim who wrote a tshuva on this topic writes, I think he's not correct, he writes, Ashkenazim always follow the Ramah, and the Sephardim always follow Rabbi Yosef Kar. So since we're all Ashkenazim, all the people here are Ashkenazim, so we follow the Ramah. So strictly speaking, the Ramah says Amiras HaLegbar does not apply to Tzedakah. It only applies to Hegdish. I don't think that statement is correct. Ashkenazim don't follow the Ramah and Sephardim follow Rabbi Yosef Kar. The Ramah follows the meaning of Ashkenazim. And Rabbi Yosef Kar follows the meaning by the Sephardim. If you have a machlokes, Rabbi Yosef Kar and the Ramah, it doesn't say anywhere that Ashkenazim follow the Ramah. The Ramah wrote on the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Kar always follows the psukim of the Sephardim, and the Ramah always follows the psukim of the Ashkenazim. But on this issue, this is across the board. This is Ashkenazim, Sephardim. It's not clear. I don't think he's right. I think you have a lot of tshuvas where the poskim assume that you do say Amirah Ashkenazi poskim, Chaim Oiza and others. They assume you do say Amirah Solagavai by tzedakah, not only by Hegdish. There's a din also. Let's say a person makes up his mind he's going to take a neder. So the Gemara says the neder is not binding until he pronounces it with his lips. The pasuk says in Parshas Vayikra, you have to pronounce a neder with your lips. Even though you made up your mind, a neder is not binding until you say it. Gama Beliba is not Mechayiv, but by Hegdish it is Mechayiv. That's a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. The Gemara called Nediv Leiv Oila Seviv. Those who had pledged in their heart to bring a Karban Oila brought the Karbanis to the Beis HaMikdash. So there's a Machlekes in Shulchan Aruch. What about Tzedakah? Let's say they made an appeal in Shul. I made up my mind, I'm going to give $1,000. Then before I give the money, I change my mind, I'm going to give $100. I give the $900 for myself. I'm not going to give $1,000. So we pass in Lalocha that Goma Belibo, just like it's Chal by Hegdish, it carries over to Tzedakah as well. A lot of things from Hegdish carry over to Tzedakah. So the Pashto says that this Amirasa Lagavaya also carries over. Chaim Oiza has a tshuva in Achiezer, and his tshuva is where he writes. Chaim Oiza was the main poisek of the modern era. He died in 1940 in the middle of the war. He dealt with a lot of modern issues. He was a modern person. So he was a super genius also. So he has a tshuva where he discusses mitzvah lekayim de rameis only applies if hushlish b'tchila lekach, if the money was given over. So let's say a person leaves a will and he writes in the will that after I die I want you to give $1,000 to this stock and $50,000 to this stock and $100,000 to that stock. Is that binding? Because that's not Roy Liyarsha, the mitzvah, the din of Rabbi Yechiman Breika, that the person has the ability to make a tzavah. It's only number one, only if there's already a shechid meira. Number two, if only it's bein ben abonim. If he's royally yosha, the tzedakah is not royally yosha. So would that be considered hushalish ben tchila lekach? So Rabbi Chaim Oizer assumes that yes. He says that since amirasa la gavoye kim sirasa la had yidami, it carries over from hegdish to tzedakah, so it's considered as if it's hushalish ben tchila lekach, kim sirasa la had yidami. So if he gave it over, so he assumes that there were pashat that we do paskin like that. Mirasa Lagabah does apply to tzedakah. So after the father dies and he left in his will, my father left the will, he left, he wants to give to him. My father learned him why you and all his children learned him why you. So he left a lot of his money to the yeshiva. Then he gave money to all the yeshivas what his children learned, what his grandchildren learned. So all of that was binding because we say by tzedakah, Mirasa Lagabah, Kimsirasa Lagabah, so it's considered as if it would have been Hushlash Mitchila Lakach. Yeah, but let's say the father leaves a will. And he wants all the daughters should get an equal share with the sons. That's, she's not royally yarsha. And if he didn't put the money away in a trust fund, he just left the will like that. So the pashtus says that that will would not be binding. Because the daughters are not royally yarsha. So Moshe Feinstein has a fantastic chiddush that has really not been accepted. Many wrote shuvahs, they disagree. Moshe has step number one has been accepted. Step number two, they don't accept. Step number one, Moshe says, the Rambam writes in Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, and Hilchos Mechira, the opening line, Ein HaMekach Niknei B'dvar. I want to transfer ownership of my watch, I want to transfer ownership of my apartment, Karka, Metaltlam, whatever. You can't just make an oral declaration and transfer ownership, you have to make a Maisa Kinyan. So Moshe Feinstein brings a lot of rayas. Chazanish quotes this from his father. In the beginning of the volume of the Chazanish and Chosha Mishpat, has one page, not one in Samar. He quotes quote after quote after quote from his father, who was a prominent Talmud Chacham in Europe, that if there's a strong Gemiras Das, that I want to transfer ownership of something, there's no need for a Maisa Kinyan. So Moshe Feinstein goes with that. Whenever there's a strong Gemiras Das, that a person plans to give over ownership of something, then you don't need a Maisa Kinyan. Then he says, when you fill out a secular will, last will and testament, the government will only honor the will. You can stand on your head. They won't listen to anything you say. That's the last will and testament. That's binding. So that's, so Rav Moshe said, that's a very strong Gemiras Das. So if a person leaves a will, that should be considered a Kinyan because of the strong Gemiras Das. No need for a Maisa Kinyan. But then Rav Moshe raises an issue, but we have a klal, Ein Kinyan L'Chamisa. The father writes in his will, as long as I'm alive, I want to own my assets. The minute I die and I no longer own the assets, then I want to give to all of my nine children equally. I want to be makna to the daughters and equal share to the sons. So that's Ein Kinyan L'Chamisa. So Moshe has a Chiddush Nifla, which has not been accepted. You have here Dayan Grosnas. He used to be labeled Grosnas. He used to be a Dayan in London. He, the last years of his life, he lived in Eretz Yisrael. He lived in the same building as Rabbi Rakefet in Yerushalayim. But he was a very big Talmud Chacham. He learned Barab Baruch there. He learned together at the same time as the Rebbe's that I had in Yeshiva, Rabbi Gerelik and Rabbi Bornstein. All those who learned in the European Yeshiva, so he learned the same time as them. So he has a tshuva where he disagrees with Rabbi Moshe. Moshe says, Achidish, Ein Kinyan L'Chamisa means like this. I give you a shtar that I give you ownership of my assets September 1st, and I die August 1st. So between August 1st and September 1st, it didn't belong to me anymore. So the Kinyan cannot take effect for you on September 1st, because there was a month gap in between the time that I died and the time that the Kinyan is supposed to take effect. The property doesn't belong to me at all. But if I say, as long as I'm alive, the property belongs to me. The minute I die and it no longer belongs to me, I want it to belong to you. So there's no gap in between. So then, yesh Kinyan L'Chamis. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein is Mechadish. So Dayan Grosnas has a whole tshuva, and others have as well. I knew Dayan Grosnas, I have his tshuvas at home, so that's why I included his tshuva. But other Dayanim also wrote the same thing. They're Beferish Gemara is against Rav Moshe. It's a peller. Rav Moshe knew all of the Gemara's Baal Peh. So they didn't, this chiddush of the Igros Moshe, they didn't accept. Rav Moshe himself didn't make any tzavoy. He made a secular will. Rabbi Soloveitchik also. Rabbi Soloveitchik made a secular will because Mishum Kibirav, the children have to observe the will. So why should he be choshed that his children are not going to live up to what he respect the wishes that he gave him? Moshe also, he didn't think his children were going to disrespect him. There's a din, yeah, the children have to listen to what the father said because of kibbutz. A lot of times, if you have a lot of money involved, so they'll forget about the kibbutz. A lot of times, even if there's not too much money involved, they'll also forget about it. Yorshim will kill each other for years and years. They'll fight in court. They'll lose more money than over the legal fees. Fighting with each other in court over $5. There's enough money in Yerusha for all the children to live for another 100 years. And they'll fight in court over the money, so, unfortunately. So the best thing is not to rely on the mitzvah of kibbutz, not to listen. Rabbi Gevega has such a tshuva. Mishum kibbutz, the children have to honor whatever their father said. So someone suggested that the din is kibbutz is only mishal av, not mishal ben. Let's say my father passed away already. Let's say my father says, I'd like to go visit Eretz Yisrael, please arrange for the tour. So I say, okay, Dad, give me your credit card and I'll make all the arrangements for you. So he says, no, kibbutz, your credit card. You pay for it. Keep it up. So the Gemara says, keep it up, mishallah, below mishal bein. The son is not mukhib to spend money on behalf of the father. Unless the father doesn't have, it's a different story. But if the father has money, and he has a credit card, he tells me, keep it up, I should spend the money. So there's no din of keep it up, I should spend money. So somebody said, if the father leaves instructions, he wants all the 9 children to get equal share, after the father dies, it's not his money anymore. All the money belongs to the 3 sons. So how can he tell the sons you should give an equal share to the sisters? The children are not mechuyev to spend money. So Rabbi Gevega writes, that's not correct. That analysis is not correct. The father's alive now and all the assets belong to him. He's saying on his money that after I die, I want all the 9 children to divide equally. That's kibbutz mishal av. It's the father's money now, and he says he wants all the children to divide it equally. So if he could trust all the children that they'll observe kibbutz, so you don't need all of these. You can stop the whole discussion now. But the problem is, whenever there's a lot of money involved, even a little money involved, sometimes the children don't get along with each other. So if you want to make kinyonim, so that's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch. How do you see to it that the daughter should get an equal share with the sons? So the Rama in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchas Yerusha, the end of Chosha Mishpat, the very end, after laws of Yerusha. So the Rama quotes from the Rishonim, from the Hagos Maimini. A quote from the Bali HaTosfos. Hagos Maimon is printed on the bottom of the page of the Rambam on every page, but it has nothing to do with the Rambam. Hagos Maimon just, not Gervis the Rambam, just tells you what Rashi and Tosfos have to say about the matter. The Magen Mishnah, the Kesem Mishnah, the Lechem Mishnah, the Mishnah Malach, these are commentaries on the Rambam. Hagos Maimon just tells you what Tosfos has to say, and they just ignore the Rambam. So the Hagos Maimon quotes, this was the practice of the Bali HaTosfos, the daughters are going to feel hurt if they get nothing. Even though that's the din in the Chumash, but you have to pacify the daughters. So the practice used to be, in the days of the Bali HaTosfos, in the days of the Ramah, and until recent years, they used to give the daughter, used to make kinyonim to give the daughters a chelek chatzi zochar. Each daughter got half of the amount that the son got. Let's say I have 3 sons, so it's going to turn out each son is going to get $10,000, so each of the 6 daughters is going to get $5,000. Half of what her son gets. That's what they used to give. They say that Reb Shlomo Zalman said that recently that that's not going to satisfy the daughters today, that you better give an equal share. Better not give shtar chatzi zachar, half the amount of a boy, because the women are going to feel hurt. They're going to feel slight. So how do you arrange to see to it that you should give the daughters an equal share? So the Shulchan Aruch has the following suggestion. Let's say when I die, I'm not going to have nine children. I don't think I'm going to have $9 million in assets. I doubt it. I'm not going to have it. So simple. I just make a hischaivus now with the lawyer. I have a Jewish lawyer. You don't have to tell my children. So the lawyer gives me a handkerchief in exchange for which I obligate myself to give $1 million to each one of my children. So I owe $9 million. So they'll clean me out now. So I say, no, I owe them the money, but they have no right to collect it till after I die. After I die, so it's in kinya lahamisa. So that's no good. So I say, they have no right to collect it till the day before I die. So that's a problem of embrera. You don't know when you're going to die, so you don't know when the day before you're going to die is. So the din is usually, let's say, a man doesn't have any children, and he doesn't want his wife to have, he's married, and doesn't want his wife to have the agony of having to go through with chalitza. His brother is a miserable person, he's going to give the alman a hard time. So he gives his wife a get, so she won't need, but he needs his wife to take care of him. He doesn't want to have an isa yichud, he wants to live happily with his wife till the day that he dies. So he gives his wife a get, he says, "Harei ze gitach la'acha she'omus, ein get la'chamisa." You can't give a get that should take effect after I die. So he says he gives his wife a get that should be chal the day before I die. So that's a machlokes in the Mishnah we pass, and it's not chal. You give a get the day before you die, you don't know when it is. Tomorrow, you're going to die tomorrow, you'll figure out tomorrow that yesterday the get was chal. But at the time the get is chal, you didn't know that it's being chal. So that's called brera. So that we pass, and that we respect the dinam daraisa and brera. So if a man gives his wife a get and he says, "I want the get to take effect the day before I die," it's not chal. Even after he died, you don't say, it's a gloy Muslim affair that yesterday the get was chal, it's not chal. So over here, the Ramah follows, there's a long run in the Dorim, in the beginning of Perek al Shutfim, gigantic run, a lot of long runs in the Dorim. So the run has, the run took over the whole Masechta. The run has this idea, and the Ramah goes for it. The only time you say Ein Brera, if it's one of the major aspects of the chalois, like when the get is chal. So you say, "I want to get to Bichal the day before I die, 24 hours before I die." So that's a major aspect of the get, when the get is taking effect. So you say, "Ein Brera." But if the man says, "I say, now I'm healthy, I tell a lawyer, you give me a handkerchief, really I should have, each one of my children should give me a handkerchief, because B'kelev Shalkaina, so they're going to create the Hischaivas, I'm going to obligate myself to give each one of the children $1 million, I know when I die I'm not going to have $9 million, so that all of them, my assets will be meshubed to pay the debt, and no one's going to get any Yerusha. No one's going to be collecting any Yerusha at all. Everybody's going to be collecting their unequal share of the debt that I created the Hischaivas." In American law, there is no such thing. In American law, you cannot create a Hischaivas unless it's in exchange for something. Just out of the clear blue sky, I obligate myself to give each one of the children $1 million. So the secular law doesn't recognize that. The secular law recognizes that the sons and the daughters yarshan equally. That's in Dini Bnei Nach, that's the din. The sons and the daughters yarshan equally. According to the halacha, also the sons and the daughters get equally, because the halacha does recognize such a hischaivus. I created hischaivus yesh meyayin to owe each one of the children $1 million. And when I die, then no one's getting any Yerusha. They were collecting the piron achayv. Yeah, but I'm afraid they'll clean me out now. So I write in the document, it shouldn't be collectible till the day before I die. If I say it shouldn't be collectible till after I die, then that's like in Kenya lachamisa. So that no one has a right to collect the debt. But if I say it should only be collectible the day before I die, so the Ramos says, since the main part of the hischaivus is clear, how much money it is, and the hischaivus begins today, just the right to collect, the schus egviya only begins the day before I die. It's a crucial aspect, but it's not the main part of the hischaivus. So the Ramah paskens on that, he say yesh brer. So that's the common practice. A person makes a kinyan with his lawyer, and the lawyer represents, the lawyer has to be Jewish. A goy can't do zach ma'alam shavifon for someone else. The children have to be Jewish also. Okay. One fellow had a problem. He became a Baal Tshuva. And his first wife was not Jewish. They wanted to leave Yerusha for his non-Jewish children also. So he had to take care of them too. So he can't say Zalchan Adam Shalai B'Fanav over there for Goyim. But indeed, if they're Goyim, so they follow Dini B'nai Noach. So they follow Dini the Machusa. So that wasn't so difficult. Anyway, so that's the common practice. That's what you do. You write schaivus. You obligate yourself to give, if you want to give all the children equally, you obligate yourself to give each one of the children $1 million, and you don't think you're going to have $9 billion in assets when you die. So all the children will divide the Yerusha equally, not B'toras Yerusha, but rather B'toras Piro and Hachayv. Why do you need the whole thing? Why don't we just say Dina the Malchus Adina? According to the secular law, the sons and the daughters Yarshan equally. So I have a tshuva here by the Maharitats. There were two people who were contemporaries of each other in the 1500s, both called Maharitats, different name. Rabbeinu Yontav Tzahalon lived in where did Rabbi Yosef Kahar live? In Tzfat. Rabbi Yonatan Tzalon lived in Tzfat, the time of the Beis Yosef. He was a young contemporary of his. So he has a tshuva on this topic. Then there was another Maritas, Rabbeinu Yosef Taitatzak. There were three Yosefs in the same generation. One was Rabbi Yosef Kara and Rabbi Yosef Taitatzak. I forgot who the third one was already. And Min HaShemayim, they say, the Mekubalim said, Min HaShemayim, one of them was going to be Zecha to write a major work, and then they chose Rabbi Yosef Kara instead of Mari Taitatzak. But he was one of the major Poskim, and he lived in Constantinople, I think. So this Rabbi Yontov Tzahalon writes in his Chuvas, when he was a young man, the Rabbanim at Tzfat sent him to the neighboring Arab countries to tell the people that Dina de Bachus Adina does not apply in Hilchas Yerusha. They can't just rely on the secular law of the land, that the sons and the daughters go to Yarshin equally, because Dina de Bachus only applies if at least one of the parties involved is non-Jewish. If all the parties involved are non-Jewish, we follow Shulchan Aruch. We don't follow Dina de Bachus. So he writes that he was sent as a shliach by the Rabbanim and Tzvas to tell all the Balabatim that. Furthermore, the Rambam writes an interesting line. Dina Machus Adina only applies in Dini Mamedes. It doesn't apply in Issa Beheta. So the Rambam has an interesting line that even though Yerusha is a matter of dollars and cents, a matter of money, but the Torah calls it Chukas Mishpat. Even though it's Mishpat, Dini Mamedes, it's money, but it's treated as if it's Issa Beheta. The Rambam writes with respect to the Dina Masna Mashkos about Torah. Here also, it's considered Issa V'Heter, so Dina de Malchusa doesn't apply. You don't apply Dina Malchusa to Issa V'Heter. That's a Dovah Pasha that doesn't apply. So that's the common practice, that people will make a Hischaivus. They can speak to the lawyer, a Jewish lawyer, he'll do Zochon Le'Olam Shleih Befonov, and he'll make a Hischaivus to each one of the children, an equal amount of money, say, after the person dies, they'll all get the equal Yerusha. The Gemara tells.
Can you make an Hischaivus if the children are alive yet? Say the person makes well when he's 30 years old and he's still planning to have children. Can you say a big Hischaivus for all the children having in the future?
The Gemara says children, yes, grandchildren, maybe not. My father, Zechan Leruch, used to meet with his lawyer every couple of years because he had another grandchild, and he made a Hischaivus. Give each one of the grandchildren a certain amount of money, a couple of $1,000 or something. So that was his big annual outing. He would go to the doctor, to the lawyer's office and say he has another few grandchildren who were born in the last couple of years. He makes another kinyan and he puts in more names into the will that they should get. So the Gemara says, you can't be mischayv yourself to your own children, daito shalotim krav eitzel, but no, even though the child wasn't born yet, but probably grandchildren not. Yeah. The Gemara tells in Bava Basra.
Once we're working through Hischaivus, is there any issue with saying that the ability to be gobe will only set in after the person dies? Meaning, is there any issue? Meaning, in terms of the kinyan achar misa.
I think they do consider that a problem.
So it has to be.
It has to be before he dies.
So we use Bray Rabbit on the secondary aspect.
Right.
How would that work in a situation if, let's say, somebody died while their wife was pregnant and then the kid was born? Is that still considered something that's going to happen in the future, so it can still happen, or is that he's not a kid?
No, the Gemara says you can make a hischaivus to your own, even though the child is a dovish labaliyon. The Gemara seems to be assuming that the problem with the Dovash Labaliyom is that there's a lack of das. But since Daito Shalot and Krav Eitzel Beno, it's his own son, so he can make his chayvus to the son who wasn't born yet.
Even if he died before the son was born, as long as he had made that his chayvus, as long as he had created the situation beforehand.
Yeah, that's what we assume. I think so. Now, the Gemara tells a story about one of the Tanoim. I think it's Yosef ben Yoezer, if I'm not mistaken. He had a son, and the son wasn't interested in becoming a Tana. The father wanted to teach him Kol HaTorah Kula, that he should become a big Tana like him. He wanted to go into business. The father was so upset, so he wanted to cut him out of his will. How much money did he have already? Well, what did he have? How much money did the Tana have? So he said he's going to give all of his money to the Beis Hamikdash. And the other Tanaim said, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to be Mava Nachla from your children. And he didn't listen. And they said that he did Keneged Adin. That's called Avurei HaChasanta. HaChasanta is Armeri for Yerusha. And Lahavir is Anachla. You're not allowed to do that. That's an Issa. Then the Gemara tells the end of the story was that this son, who wasn't a Tana, he was a nice religious Balabas. He davened Talis and Tzon every day. Maybe he learned Daf Yomi also, but he wasn't a Tana, that's all. So the father was so upset, he gave all the money to the Beis HaMikdash. So the son got involved in a Shaila later on. He donated more to the Beis HaMikdash than the father ever gave by being Mav and Nachla from him. The son, the Gemara said, the son was a nice guy. So how much money do you have to live to the? How much money do you have to leave to the children that you shouldn't be in violation of Avurei HaChasanta? A couple of years ago, a rabbi called me up on the phone. There was a boy learned in the kollel here, and he was so miserable to his parents. He married, and he had a whole family. He never called the parents when he had a bris, when he had a pidyon ben. When he had a bar mitzvah, marrying off the children, never called the parents. After he got married, never had any contact. The parents were very wealthy people. They could have supported him. He wanted to learn, could have supported him. The kid had a zhuk in his head. So the father had such agmas nefesh. The father aged years because of that son. He wanted to cut him out of his tzava. He wanted to leave his tzava. So in Shulchan Aruch they say that sometimes it is justified. That you may cut a child out of your will. Usually it's not right, but on rare occasions it is justified. So in his case, I think it was justified. So how much money do you have to... You see, it's called Maver Nachla Zayin, even if you're leaving the money to the Beis HaMikdash, you may leave the money to Tzedakah. So how did my father leave it? So boy, they should leave so much money to YU and this yeshiva, not yeshiva. It's all being Maver Nachla. He should leave all the money to the children. So this is a whole discussion in Shulchan Aruch. So there's a tradition for the Gaonim based on a Mishnah in Ksubis that if you leave over 4 dinarim or something like that, $25. If you leave over $25 for the children, that's a ginoch. So most of the Ksois quotes it, and most of the Poskim do not accept that. They think that that's a joke. For the Mishnah in Ksubis, it's a different din. But to say that if you leave over $25, that's good enough. So some Poskim are of the opinion you have to leave over 51%, a rive of your assets, you have to leave over for the Yorshim, and then 49% that you can do whatever you want. They write that the Rav Yechiel Michal Tikuchinsky, the one who wrote the Sefer Gesher Achayim, has all the three volumes, all the Hilchos Avelos. So when he died, he was conscious when he was about to die, so he was telling his children all the instructions, open a window, light a candle, and do this. After I die, he put me on the floor and everything, and he gave away 49%. He held la halacha like that. You have to leave over 51% for the yorshim, and you can give away 49%. How much money did he have? He sold the svarim. He sold the Gesher Achayim. So how much money did he make already on it? So he left 51% for his children, and 49% he gave away to tzedakah. The Pischei Tshuva and Chayshim Mishpat quotes the Chasam Sefer, who disagrees. He thinks it's not necessary to leave 51% for the Yorshim. You can leave less, but you just have to leave a significant amount. So Moshe Feinstein follows that Chasam Sefer. The Moshe has a tshuva that was written 70 years ago, I guess. He says, if you leave $10,000 for each Yorish, that's enough. $10,000, you can buy a cigar. What can you buy for $10,000? Underwear. Can't buy too much. Mustama today, you probably have to leave $100,000 for each one of the Yorshim. But after you leave a significant amount for each one of the Yorshim who's in line to get a Yerusha, then there's already no Isra of Avurei HaChasanta. That's what most assume. The Rambam wrote a Sefer Mitzvahs. Based on the Gemara at the end of Makkos, the Gemara said there's 613 mitzvahs. The Gemara says there's 613, but the Gemara doesn't say which they are. Which are the 613? So the Rambam gives you his opinion. The Ramban deletes a whole bunch of mitzvahs, says a whole bunch of mitzvahs, lo sesse, has to replace them with others. You have to have 248 mitzvahs, sesse, 365 mitzvahs, lo sesse. So the Ramban in the Hashmatas to the minyan halavim, mitzvah yud beis, adds on the following lav. Lo yuchal levaka is ben ha'ahuva. As ha'pchoy ben asnu ha'yakir, he says there's a mitzvah incumbent on the father to let everyone know who the pchor is, that the pchor should, he should see to it that the pchor should get the pishnayim. So that's a discussion the Rav in Frankfurt corresponded, that's the first of the Marmar Kamos here, pages 1 and 2. He corresponded with Rav Yitzchak Hana, who was the big Pesach at that time. So the Shaila was, the father knows the children are not going to honor the din. Everybody knows who the Pchor is. They know who's the oldest son, and he's entitled to Pishnayim. But the children are not observant. They're not going to give the Pchor the Pishnayim. So is it the father's responsibility that he should see to it that the brothers give their older brother the Pishnayim? Well, it's the brother's responsibility. It's not his headache. So the Ramban in the Sefer HaMitzvahs claims that that's what it means. As a Pchor ben Asno Yaker, the father has an obligation to see to it that the Pchor gets the Pishnayim. So he quotes that in his letter from Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan. The Gaon sent a letter to this rabbi in Frankfurt, so he included in his Sefer Matelev. So Ritz Gaon says, it's that Ramban is really against the Gemara. He quotes the Tzoyses, the Kash. Gemara in the end of Kiddushin, Gemara in the end in Baruch Basra, and Yeshtenchel, Gemara asks, Yakir Lomali, why does the Chumash say that the father is believed to say who the oldest son is? Father is Biyodo, he can give it away as a gift to the Pchor. What do you need a Pasuk to say that the father is believed? So he says, but according to the Ramban, what kind of a question? What do you need a pasuk in the father's belief? No, it's the father's responsibility to see to it that the pchor gets the pishnayim. Maybe that's the mitzvah sasei. So the Gemara seems to be against this Ramban. It's a problematic Ramban. Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan thinks, though, that vaprusha meyisura, the father thinks his children are going to violate the din atar, they're going to steal from the pchor. They're not going to honor the din and the chumash of pishnayim. They're going to go to secular court, and the secular court are going to say there is no such thing as pishnayim. So he says the father should probably make a will, fill out a will in such a way to secure that the Bechor should get the Pishnayim. That's not right to do away with the Pishnayim. Then he discusses the topic of Muchzak. What if it's federally insured, the bank is federally insured? Is that halva also considered Rawi, or is not? Okay, that's a major topic. Dayan Grosnas, in his tshuva, which you have here in the packet, quotes, we have tshuvas from Abchaim Moshe, which he printed during his lifetime. He edited, he had copies of the letters that he sent, and he edited the letters. He wrote them letters regards to so-and-so, and this one is not feeling well, and has the Rebbetzin feeling, so he left all that out in the tshuvas that he printed himself. And then after Abchaim Moshe passed away, then they published an additional collection of tshuvas that were not edited, has more historical value, because he has other things in the letters, aside from the tshuvas. So one of those letters, the Kovitz Igros Achiezer, he has this fantastic chiddush that we don't apply din in the Malchus Adina when all the parties involved are Jewish. That's what the Maritatz wrote. Rabbi Yontov Tzahalon writes that he was sent, I mentioned before, he was a young man, he was sent by the Rabbanim at Tzvat to visit the communities in the neighboring Arab countries to tell the Balabatim they're not allowed to follow Dina Machusa. It only applies when at least one of the parties involved is a non-Jew. Here by Yerusha, all the parties involved are Jewish. But what if all the parties involved are Jewish, but they went to court, and the court gave a psak? So what you have a lot of times today is one party wants to go to court and the other one does want to go to court. He says it's against the din. You're not allowed to go to our cause. It's a serious avera. Elam mishpatam shetosim lefneim. Lefneim lo lefnei our cause. You're not allowed to go to secular court. So if one of the parties goes to court, even though he was told they're not allowed to, so sometimes we'll penalize him. So if he won in court, we may sometimes decide to penalize him. But even though he won in court, we'll make the din Torah over again, and we'll award the money to the other one. Well, let's say they both decided they want to go to court. They both went to court. That happens very often. So once they both agreed to go to court, knowing Ba'al, then even though they did, even if you should assume they did wrong, whatever the court decided, that's the psak. Just like there's a din hefker bezna hefker, the din of hefker bezna hefker is based on din in the machus din. The bezna has a right to be mafke mamon because whenever the government is not taking care of it, so the bezna has to take care of it. So it's an extension of din in the machus din. So din machus din applies even if all the people involved are Jewish. If the court gave a specific psak on this instance, let's say the father filled out a secular will, and the children didn't ask any questions. They went to court, and the court passed according to what it said in the secular will. So Abchaim Isis said, then whatever the father wrote in the will, he gave an equal share to the daughters. He never made any kinyonim, never made any hischaibas to give each one of the children a debt of $1 million. Never did that. He just wrote in the will. He wants the sons and the daughters to yarshin equally, and they went to court. So in one of the, in this collection of additional tshuvas by Abchaim Isis, so he has two letters. And one letter he says if they went to court, so the court awarded 1/9 of the assets to the daughters. Each daughter gets their share, right? Okay. Another one of the letters he writes, even if they didn't go to court, even if they didn't go to court, since the father filled out the secular will, so maybe that's also considered. And it was recorded in the court. The secular will is recorded by the lawyers in the court. So since it was recorded, maybe that's considered also as if the government already passed it. So that's what Dan Grossman discusses, that possibility. That if a person filled out a secular will, even if the children didn't go to court, that was one svara in Rav Chaim Moshe. He raised such a possibility, and maybe the secular will is considered as if it's already always gepaskin. There is an interesting... For years, there was a practice that the yeshiva bachrim in the Litvish yeshivas and Tells and the Chassidish yeshivas for sure, they used to all send postcards to the Ragachover. He used to get hundreds of postcards. He would go broke if he had to pay for the postage. So they used to have double postcards. You sent the postcard, and then it was, you ripped it, when the person received it, you ripped it off on the perforation, and there was another postcard there with postage paid already, prepaid, and he would respond what he wants to answer. So they, whoever sent the letter, whenever they sent a postcard to the Ragachov, they had to send him prepaid postage on his return postcard. So they printed a lot of these postcards. That was the shtick. Everybody had a good kasha, had a good shayla, they would ask the Ragachov. I remember Rabbi Gifter once told us that when he was learning in Europe in Tells Yeshiva, he learned here in high school, and then they sent him to learn in Tells. So he had some kind of a kasha, and he asked all the experts there, a kasha on krisis or something. He asked all the big Talmid Chacham, and he said, it's a murderous kasha, you should send the kasha to the Ragachover. So he sent it to the Ragachover, so he sends him back, Lama Yatrideni, what are you pestering me? Tosis has the kasha, and Erechim. Some favor and Tosis has the kasha. Anyway, but they have all these collection of letters, they keep on printing more. Many people, all the people, they have postcards from the Ragachover, so they keep on printing more collections. The first collection was printed by his own daughter after he passed away. He had one daughter, the Ragachover, who married a Talmid Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. And then she went, in the middle of the war, she went back to Europe in order to save her father's ksavim. And they warned her, you're going to get killed. That was the end of the story. She was killed by the Nazis, and she had no children, and that was the end. So he had no descendants. The Ragachover had no descendants. But she put out the volume of a collection of her father's letters. So in that collection, that's called Tzafnas Panach New York. It was printed in New York. So in that connection, it's called Shabbos Tshuvas. It's not really Shabbos Tshuvas. It's always talking and learning. So somebody asked them, would it make sense? When we're going, I think the Shaila was, one will make them. They were dreaming about making a Jewish Medina. They were talking about the founding Medina in Eretz Yisrael. I remember Rav Soloveitchik said, he remembers speaking, he used to go, because my Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was in Europe, so he spoke only with his father. When Rav Moshe Soloveitchik came to America, so he used to correspond with his father, and then his father encouraged him, he should travel from Berlin to go to Vilna to talk and learning with Rav Chaim Moshe. Because all the yeshiva bachim used to go to Rav Chaim Moshe's home to talk and learning with him. So he said it was the most exasperating thing to talk and learning with Rav Chaim Moshe. He would tell him he worked so hard, Rav Soloveitchik worked so hard, came up with a chiddush, Chamaisa said, yeah, it says in the Nis and this Sefer. He climbed up on his ladder, pulled the Sefer out, blew off the dust, and here it says in the Beferish. Every Chiddush the Rabbi Soloveitchik says, Chamaisa Shalom is all printed, everything is printed. He knew all his Svarim. He was unbelievable. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said he remembers once talking to Rabbi Chaim Moshe about the possibility of establishing a Medina in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Chaim Moshe was known as a big politician also. Not only in learning, he was fantastic. He knew Mili Dalma, he had a tfis on what's happening. He said it was so the furthest thing from one's mind. He said, when hair will grow on the palm of my hand, then there's going to be a Medina. No one could foresee at all that there was going to be a Medina. So anyway, so the Esther Ragat Shava also. Well, we'll make a Medina in Eretz Yisrael. Maybe we should make a Dina in the Malchusa that the sons and the daughters should get Yerusha equally. And the Hefke Bez and the Hefke is based on Dina in the Malchusa. We'll solve the whole problem. The women won't have any complaints. So he said, you can't do that. He said, that was the complaint of the early Christians against the rabbis, that they're not being fair to the women. The complaint that the conservatives and the reform have against the Orthodox, that we're not fair to the women, he says that was the complaint of the early Christians. And he quotes the Gemara Masechet Shabbos that they went, one of the Tanoim and his sister, Eimah Shalom Dvisu de Rab Leizer, was the wife of Rab Leizer. So there was a court case between a son and a daughter who gets the Yerusha. So they went to a Goyish judge. So the Goyish judge was a Christian, early Christian. So Goyish just said the son and the daughter Yarshan equally. So he writes, this was one of the first attacks of the Christians against the rabbis, why they don't treat the women properly, why they don't give the women an equal share in the Yerusha. And he quotes the Gemara Yesh Nechlin, that there was a dispute in later years, the Tzedukim aren't going to say against the Chumash, the women don't get Yerusha, but maybe Tirish Abbas and Bas Abayn. Let's say a man had a son and a daughter, and the son died and he left the daughter. So the din is, man had a son and a daughter, the son gets the whole Yerusha. Son died before the father, so the son left the daughter, so the daughter gets the whole Yerusha. So the granddaughter gets the whole Yerusha, and the daughter gets nothing. So that's mamish not fair. So the tzedukim argued, we can't go against the din and the chumash, the daughters don't get Yerusha, but at least if there's a son and a daughter, and the son predeceases the father, and he leaves a daughter, so the granddaughter gets and the daughter gets nothing, at least Tirush Abbas and Bas Abayn, at least the daughter should get an equal share with the granddaughter. And the Chacham said, no, that's against Allah. And whoever says that, he put him in Chayram, because obviously it's from the Tzdukim. The Tzdukim, that was the first complaint, that you're not mitzarf minyan, women to the minyan, and women sit behind the mechitza, the same complaints that they have now. So that's what the Tzavtas Banach says. You can't make such a din in the Malchusa. That would be indecent, that to make a law, Medina Sisro, that the sons and the daughters should yarshan equally, that's against the whole Jewish tradition. You can't do that. Okay, I think we finished all the topics. Good. Bakasha.
So, what if the husband leaves all his money to his wife, and then the wife passes away, so what happens to the money?
The wife has to leave a will. The wife has to fill out a will. My wife filled out a will. I filled out a will. Each one, the will says, in case my husband dies first, in case the wife dies first, the lawyer put
There's
in all...
There's a concept of double Yerusha for the firstborn if the wife inherited the money?
I mean, when the wife dies, there's no din apchor. No, only when a man dies, there's a din apchor. If he has the oldest child, there's a boy. Lo mishpat apchor, lo velo lo. The mother dies, there's no din of pishnaim. Only if the father dies.
What about equal splitting of the money between the children if the mother died after she got the money from her husband?
Right.
So would they split it amongst themselves because it's not the father's money anymore, it's the mother's money?
It's the mother's money. So
therefore, it's equal or...
It's not going to be equal. Only the son's yarsh and the daughter's don't get.
So
less
transfers
than
over the concept.
Yes. So the wife has to make the same hischaibis that the husband made. She wants all the children to divide it equally. She has to do the same spiel that the husband does. You go to the same lawyer, makes the same kidney.
What if she didn't leave a will?
So if you go to secular court, they'll divide everything equally, but that's against halacha. You're not supposed to. That's gezel.
In Eretz Yisrael, you know what they do?
Unfortunately, in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Herzog was the chief rabbi at the time of Hakamas HaMedina. So he was waiting for a phone call from Ben Gurion after Hakamas Amdina that they should, he should help establish the legal system. He's still waiting for the phone call. Alo Yamazeh. Remember, they had the 50th yard site of Rav Herzog was recently, a couple of years ago. So that's they had sessions in Eretz Yisrael in his honor for a few days. They asked me to participate. I was there anyway for the OU. So they asked me to participate in that. So that one of the people spoke about that. So they said, Rav Herzog is still waiting for the phone call. Because he wrote books in English. He was from Ireland. He wrote books in English about Jewish jurisprudence. So he thought they're going to accept the whole Chosh Mishpat into the secular law. Instead, they adopted the Turkish law and Arab law and British law, everything but halacha. I think the only halacha, only area of halacha that they accepted was Hilchos HaShavas Aveda. There's so much more in Chosh Mishpat. They didn't accept anything. And Yerusha especially, Yerusha is considered Issa V'Heta. So that's scandalous that they follow secular law on Yerusha. This Marit Tzahalon, Rabbi Yontov Tzahalon, he is known for a different thing. Rabbi Yosef Kara passed away, and he had three sons. So after he died, one of the sons died leaving no children. So his wife needed Chalitza or Yibum. So they're Sfardim. So by the Sfardim, they practice Yibum until Hakamas Amdina. Then at the time Hakamas Amdina, so all the Sfardish Rabbanim signed the Hesgame that they're not going to do Yibam anymore because the Ashkenazim don't. It's going to be confusing. What are you going to do if you're going to have a mixed marriage? One is an Ashkenazi, one is a Sephardi. So they all signed the Hesgem. None of them are going to do any Yibam anymore. Then Chacham Avadia, that time, lived in Cairo, I think. He lived in Egypt. So he wrote a whole Shula that the Hesgem that the Sephardi Rabbanim agreed to has no tokiv. How can they sign a Hesgem against Halacha? Sephardi Pesach is that you have to do Yibam. It's preferable to do Yibam. So, anyway, in the days of the Beis Yosef, they still practice Yibum. So the brother who was supposed to do the Yibum was already married. And the Almana was the sister of Rav Chaim Vital. Her name was Simcha, a girl's name, boy's name, girl's name, Simcha. Her name was Simcha Vital. She was married to the son of Rav Yosef Kar, passed away. And she needed Chalitza Yibum, so she wanted Chalitza. And the brother wanted to do Yibum. And her father, the father of Rav Chaim Vital, the father of the girl told her, don't agree to Yibum because he's not going to treat you nicely. He's going to treat the other wife. He was married to the other wife for so many years. He's going to treat you like a second fiddle. He's not going to respect you. So it was a standstill. So she said she insists on Chalitza, and he insisted, the brother of the Nifter insisted he's going to do Yibum. So they didn't get anywhere. So the rabbi in Tzfat told the girl that the Gemara says in Chalitza, Yibam Mesher Rokoko, when you do, every so often there's a Chalitza in the yeshiva. So the next time they announce the Chalitza, you should watch. It's important. You got to see what a Chalitza looks like. You shouldn't forget the traditions of how you do Chalitza. So the din is that after the Chalitza, after she takes off the shoe, then she spits on the floor. The Yorka B'fanov. So what if she does the rikika before she takes off the shoe? So that that's not the ikar of the chalitza is the taking off of the shoe, not the rikika. But the Gemara has a din with the rabbanon. There's a din once you did chalitza, you're not allowed to do yibam. So once yibam shirokika, once she spit on the floor in front of him. So there's a din with the rabbanon shemar sign. The people who are watching will think they must have completed the whole chalitza procedure, because the rikika comes after the chalitza sandal. So once you ram shirakako, then you don't permit him to do the yibam anymore. Then you only allow him to do chalitza. So they told the girl Simcha Vital, the almana, she should go into shul. So if you ever saw the Arizal shul in Tzfat, so she tiptoed into shul on a Monday or Thursday morning when they were davening. They thought she was crazy. What's the girl doing in shul on Monday or Thursday morning? She walked over to the brother-in-law, she spit on the floor, and she tiptoed out. So they thought she lost her mind. So the rabbi said, that's it. Yivam Shirok Kukot Tachlok. Now we're going to force the Yavim to do Chalitz. He said, what are you talking about? Yivam Shirok Kukot means that they both agreed to do Chalitz, but they started doing it backwards, but he never agreed to do any Chalitz. He wanted to do Yivam along. He never changed his position. So it was a whole machlokes. So this Marit Tzahalon, this Rabbi Yontov Tzahalon, I think he was only 18. He wrote a knockout shula at that time that the rabbi in Tzfat made a mistake. that the din is not correct, and they forced him to do chalitza. So he wrote a tshuva that chalitza was shaloi kedin, and she's not allowed to remarry. She's not allowed to remarry. So the girl remained at almana all of her life. She could never remarry because he didn't want to do chalitza, and the chalitza that he forced him to do was shaloi kedin. So that he's known for that psak. The psak about the chalitza shaloi kedin with Rabbi Yosef Karasan. Okay. Very good.
Maybe like that, we'll continue.